I'm a former dancer, so I'm used to not having dialogue. And I'm a big fan of silent movies. I think that we can get away with a lot of stuff without talking. In this case, it was necessity because he's alone. So we had a little dialogue with himself, you know, behaving insane to try to stay sane, which is probably what you would do in a situation like that.
That was Mads Mikkelsen, who the actual pronunciation is, Bill Bregoli tells me, is Mads Mikkelsen, from the movie Arctic, which you're going to talk about in a moment. I'm Neil Rosen. Welcome to Sitting Around Talking Movies. I'm joined by Bill Bregoli.
Almost fluent in Danish.
And I'm joined with Bill McCuddy.
No, Bregoli is Bill McCuddy. Is from the state of Mads, then.
That's right.
And Boston Mads.
Hello, Bill McCuddy. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Okay, that's good. And we're going to talk about this movie, Arctic, which Bill Bregoli saw. And it's very appropriate because we're sitting here in New York taping this, and tomorrow it's supposed to be like 15 below zero with the wind chill. So what a apropos movie to talk about. Guy gets stuck in Bill.
Well, when we meet him, he is stuck. We don't see him get stuck. He's living in the wreckage of a plane. We're not sure if he's the pilot or anything. In fact, you would hate this movie because it had, much like Dunkirk, there is no backstory for this guy. Okay. It's just a guy.
Oh, my God.
Trying to catch fish. Actually, when we meet him, he's scraping something.
So it's Castaway if we just join Tom Hanks when he's just been on the island for a year talking to Wilson the tennis ball. We have no idea why he's there and why he's talking to the soccer ball.
And there's no dialogue, almost no dialogue.
Almost no dialogue. There is a little bit.
So because, like Emily Blunt, who just won for A Quiet Place, he might win a Screen Actors Guild Award next year.
He just might. Actually, someone else does show up in the film, but she's practically in a coma. So...
Did you like the film?
Actually, I did like it.
What did you like about it?
I enjoyed the fact that we don't know anything about him because we concentrate on what he's doing. And it was shot in the wilds of Iceland.
So it's a survivalist thing.
It's a survival thing. And the ending is kind of open. It might really frustrate some people.
So basically, there's no dialogue.
There's
very
little.
Do we ever find out why the guy is stuck in the Arctic?
Nope, we just know that he's stuck.
And it's just, how does he eat? How does he battle the elements?
We see how he battles the elements. He has a fishing line rigged up into the ice.
Does he have to, like, escape polar bears?
Yes, he does at one point.
Really?
There is a polar bear.
There are no wolves up in the Arctic.
Interestingly enough, he's in a movie called Polar, and there is no polar bear.
Yeah, I know. He's in a movie called Polar, and he's in a movie called Arctic.
Which is really kind of awful.
And he shot a movie about Iceland and Greenland and Australia, or Greenland and Iceland, yeah. And who's behind this film?
The director is a guy named Joe Pena.
And where do we see it?
We can see it in one of four theaters that's opening in this weekend throughout the country, but supposedly it may go wider. It's actually getting good reviews. People like it. People who are into like survival films.
I love this guy. Remember, he was on my top 10 list a couple of years ago.
I love this guy, too. What was that movie on
the
our
Hunter?
TV show?
The Hunted?
He did Hannibal. He played the lead role in the Hannibal.
No, there was a movie that Hannibal. I loved. Where he was accused of pedophilia and he was innocent. He was a school teacher. Do you remember?
Oh, sure. That's great. That was in Europe somewhere too.
And he almost got nominated.
Like
there was talk about nominating him for an Oscar for that at one particular point.
Yeah,
he was terrific, and then he was this innocent guy, and some kids were some,
right.
Yeah, I don't remember the name of that. It was a great foreign movie.
He's been a Bond villain. He's done a lot of stuff.
What Bond film, Mr. Bond expert?
What was he in? He was, it was one of the Pierce Brosnan ones. Tomorrow Never Dies,
Tomorrow Never Dies?
I think so.
Not The Living Daylight.
Yeah, he's a very nice guy. I mean, I sat down and talked to him.
Didn't he cry ice cubes or something? It was like something weird.
He's a really good actor. So how is he in this and how is he in Poland?
He's very good in this. I mean, it's all internal acting, as he told me. You just got to think about what this guy's going through and do it.
And how is he in Polar?
In Polar, he's a hitman.
Is he bipolar?
He's a hitman who's about to retire. Let me tell you, there's a little telling to this plot here, so give me a chance. There's a hitman who's about to retire.
You're acting like Lisa Rossman all of a sudden, like we're cutting you off.
There's a hitman who's about to retire, but his boss gives him gives all the hitmen in this hitman company $8 million upon retirement. Now, the boss wants to sell the company. The people who want to buy it say, look, you owe all these guys millions of dollars. And he said, don't worry about that. My book's going to be clean. What he does is I have a squad of other hit people kill all the other guys before they retire. And His company is the beneficiary. Yeah, the new crop of Pittman.
For $7 million. So he's changed. Like,
yeah, something like that. But he's in it. Vanessa Hudgens is in it. And you wonder why until maybe the last 5 minutes of the movie. Because.
This is not in subtitles.
No, this is a, this is in English. It's
Mads
a,
is. What is his nationality?
He's Danish.
Danish. Okay. Yeah. So he has an accent in the film, obviously.
Yeah, a bit of an accent. They have a name from. Something, the Stone Cold Killer or something. They explain it.
Well, this sounds a lot more interesting than the
Arctic. Well, based on a graphic novel, well, it's very big. Kind of like, you know immediately that it was taken from a graphic novel.
It sounds John Wickish.
Yeah, it is John Wickish. It's even more, it's edging toward
Sin City or any of the thing. Yeah. But is it, it's not in that chroma key black and white.
No, it's not. It's not in that visual set, but it's.
But we've seen the story.
And it was directed by a guy who did mostly videos, a guy named Jonas Åkerlund.
I like the twist that you're telling me because we've seen a bunch of movies where the hitman wants to retire, and or even in a lot of cases, it's the cop that wants to retire, but they've got to do one more job or one more thing, get sucked.
There is a wonderful scene though that I really did like, where he's sort of interested in this woman played by Vanessa Hudgens, where he's hiding out in Colorado, supposedly. He's sort of interested in this woman. She's very shy, but she's a school teacher. And she says, he tells her he's in the funeral business, and he arranged funerals in Europe. So she buys that. And she says, can you talk to the kids about traveling in Europe? And he basically teaches them how to be little hitmen and how to kill people.
At like a school? He's like, comes on... Career Day or something?
Yeah, it's like Career Day, and it's a really funny scene. But
that's fun. Well, that we've seen that also in. I mean, it's funny. The more movies you see, like everything, like I'm saying, oh, that's a little bit of like the way Bill just said, John Wickie. This sounds a little like The Professional, where the Jean-Luc Besson movie, where Jean Reno has to teach Natalie Portman how to be like a professional assassin, you know?
Yeah.
Or even when Lethem Nikita,
the kids learn about
teach
poisons,
her.
And yeah, it's really funny.
Right.
What kind of knife to use and what technique to use with the knife. And they gamely go about acting out how to kill somebody. It's really bizarre.
What's the one I like with Saoirse Ronan where she's taught to be like a killing machine?
It's the her name.
Yeah.
Hannah?
Hannah, good.
Okay. That's a good. See, she Hannah, has one by last... the way, streaming probably on Netflix or somewhere. Hannah, Saoirse Ronan, great, great movie.
To your point about they've just got one more gig and then they're going to retire, maybe we should say next week we just have one more podcast and then something interesting will happen.
All right, let me ask you this.
Okay.
What's your favorite movie set in really, really, I know you're not prepared for this, but off the top of your head, set in unbelievably cold weather?
Fargo.
Fargo is a really good choice. Yeah, I would go with Fargo. I was going to say that movie Alive, where the Uruguayan soccer team, the top blows off the plane, they crash land in the Himalayas, and they have to, like, it becomes like the Donner Party.
Vincent Gallo in that? Or some, no, the...
But it's like, it's cannibalism. It becomes like Lord of the Flies.
Right, Timothy, that song. I would argue The Thing, which was, that was at Substation Zero, right? Where the Carpenter
and
movie?
And there's Ice Station Zebra.
right, and then there's Ice Station Zebra, which was Howard Hughes' favorite movie.
Yes, and then there was
watched it over and over and over again.
Yes, there was, and then there's. Well, you could
this
you
digression
say
is brought
Reds,
to you by LaCroix.
Reds, where Diane Keaton has to go through all that snow in Russia to get to reunite with Warren Beatty.
Dr. Zhivago.
Oh well, there's a classic. Yeah, I'm going with. I like you. I'm going with Fargo. I'm taking. I think that's a great one. Fargo's just. That's my favorite Coen Brothers movie. Period. Anyway. Before we go on to stuff that's on TV and streaming, Bill, you saw the Lego movie too. Pinch me. I'm so excited to hear about this one. Well, actually, the Lego movie wasn't bad. How does it compare to the first Lego movie? And tell us about the Lego movie.
All right. Let me tell you about it first, because comparisons are kind of weird. It takes place 5 years after the events of the first movie. Remember the dad, played by Will Ferrell, tells his son, okay, now you can play with your Legos. He's downstairs in the basement. But you have to let someone else play with you. The door opens, and it's the little sister. Well, this takes place 5 years later.
I think we were all hanging on the edge of our seat at that end of that one.
Right. Well,
so.
I remember that ending so vividly. I just kept thinking about it.
Well,
finally, so many unanswered questions.
That's right. Well, the little sister has basically ruined Legoland. And Legoland has turned into Mad Max. at the beginning of this movie. It's all laid to waste. And they're being
Do they baited. Reference Mad Max, or are you just saying it's Mad Max?
It looks like Mad Max. Okay. No, they don't. Oh, well, it's a visual reference.
Okay.
There are a million references in this film. If you as much as let your eyes...
And it's adult funny as well as kid
it
funny.
It is definitely adult funny. They remember the song, Everything is Awesome?
Vaguely.
From the first movie?
From the first movie, Everything is Awesome.
Oh, yes, I do. Actually,
right.
I do. Yeah.
Well...
Yes, I do.
That song comes back.
Okay.
Even with you singing it just then, it's sort of familiar to me.
Okay. And this time, they sing Everything's Not Awesome because things are bad. There's also a song called This Song Will Be Stuck in Your Head or something similar to that.
None of the other Lego movies are part of it, though, right? There's no Lego Batman.
Why is
there
no, there is a Lego Batman.
Lego Batman,
all
isn't
the, all the characters actually come back.
Why is everything not awesome?
Because they're stuck living in Mad Max land for a while. And
do they
Space
make it like
Invaders.
Contemporary? Like, do they build a wall out of Legos or something?
No.
That would be good.
They have to do... Well, they
the best wall ever.
They go to Batman's giant fort. And Will Arnett does a great job as Batman. Elizabeth Banks is actually more of the lead in the movie than Chris Pratt's character.
Did you like the first Lego movie?
I did like the first Lego movie, and I like this one.
If you were rating
movies,
them, I'm not asking you to give a rating, but would you say they were on par? Like you
give
them the same
on par.
Numerical grade?
This is some of the same ideas, and it kind of beat you over the head in a way. I'm too old for this movie, I got a feeling.
but you had a lovely conversation with one of the stars.
That's right. I talked to Stephanie Beatriz, who...
She's on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, right?
Yeah. I always liked your character's nose. I don't know what it is.
I'm not paying attention, but she's directing one of the episodes.
No, I mean, Fox canceled it. They weren't happy with the ratings. Yeah. Obviously, the only reason, other than a Roseanne situation, why they cancel shows is they're not happy with the ratings. So they want to go in another direction. I'm just wondering if NBC is satisfied with the ratings.
Well, I'm sure it rode the wave of that huge push it got from Andy Samberg hosting the Golden Globes.
Yeah, it's true. And, but I'm just wondering how it's doing. So
this
knows.
Moment of facetious that no one got is brought to you by LaCroix. No, I have no idea. But she did one. She directed one.
She did one. And
she
supposedly, according to the press notes, she has a scar underneath one of her eyes from a flying Lego or something when she was a girl.
Really?
Yeah,
but you didn't ask her about that? You didn't go into the dark?
I didn't want to go the dark side. I wanted to make sure I got the Brooklyn Nine-Nine stuff for you.
What did you talk about?
Oh, we talked about her auditioning for the film and how much she likes Legos.
When I heard that they were making another Lego movie, I was sort of like, oh, that's so amazing. How incredible. I can't wait to see it. And then I got the audition and was already just over the moon that I was getting to audition for it. And then booking it felt insanely incredible. I felt like I was, you know, you hear people say like, Cloud Nine as a descriptor, but it felt like I was floating on air the day that I booked the job.
And incidentally, anyone who's a parent or been around little kids has had that moment where you stepped on a Lego, right?
Yes.
That actually figures into the plot of this Lego movie. Yeah, so that's kind of cool.
So before we move on, I have to tell you that on last week, the Oscars are coming up. We're going to do our own Oscar prediction show. But I had it was a lot of fun. I was a guest on WABC Radio with Bernie and Sid. They're great, great morning team. And I gave them my Oscar predictions, and we had a lot of fun. It's a really good show. It's on 77 ABC, and I'm going to kind
of... Do they watch the movies? Had they seen anything?
They had seen a bunch of the movies.
Had they seen Roma?
No.
Or they like the rest of America?
Flipper, their producer, who produced... When I used to have my own show on ABC...
The producer's name is Flipper?
Well, that's her nickname, but Jill is her name. She had seen Roma and agreed with all of us. I said it was boring, and I said it's not going to win, and they hadn't seen the movie, Bernie and Sid... But Jill,
I like this Flipper woman.
But Flipper said, yeah, I was bored. So
Did you bet these guys anything?
What's that?
Did you bet anything like you often have?
No,
a bet
I didn't
with
bet.
Bill?
But these guys they came from WFAN. They have a sports background, so they're very into handicapping and.
My
and
old co-host Juliet Huddy is their
newswoman. That's right. When you were on Fox,
Huddy and McCuddy.
But it was a lot of fun, and I'm gonna be their guy going back there doing. Doing reviews for them periodically, so a lot of fun. So shout out to Bernie and Sid, morning show on WABC Radio. Thanks, guys, and we'll do it again soon. Moving on to the streaming world. Actually, let's move on to the television world. TNT has been promoting the shit out of this miniseries with Chris Pine called I Am the Night, which is based on the Black Dahlia... what would you call that? The Black Dahlia
mystery murder.
Mystery
murder?
Novel,
I don't know what you call the thing, but Chris Pine stars in it, and he reunites with the director of Wonder Woman, who, Chris, if you remember Wonder Woman, Chris Pine was in Wonder Woman with Gal Gadot. And that's Patty Jenkins. And she directs a couple of the episodes. And I think she's the producer of the whole thing. And so is Chris Pine, is producing it. And he's this gumshoe reporter in the mid-60s in L.A. It's an L.A. noir kind of thing. And this is actually based on the book of this daughter who was raised... Well, it's really complicated. Let me see if I could distinctly say this. Okay, the movie opens up.
Smoke them if you got them.
She looks white, but she's sitting at a table in school, and this white girl who's new in the school wants to sit at the table. She goes, "Oh, I don't know anybody here. Do you mind if I sit with you?" And she goes, "No, please, please do." And they go, "No, no, you can't sit with her. She's colored." This is early 1960s. And you find out that, you know, she's biracial, and that she's being raised by this African-American woman in this area in Reno, Nevada. But she finds out that that's not her real mother, that she was... This is all right up front. There's six episodes. It's a miniseries. You find out pretty soon in that first episode that she was given up for adoption to this woman, and the woman was given money to raise her, but she finds out that she has... who's her real parents? Who's her real great? And it starts unraveling. The grandfather is this freaky, creepy. First, they start following her. There's a guy that keeps following her in a car in her school, and she doesn't.
I think the series is shorter than this explanation.
Well, it turns out it's all connected to the Black Dahlia thing. Her grandfather.
It's kind of Chinatown-esque, if I remember the story.
It's L.A. Confidential light, Chinatown light. You know,
and how's Chris Pine?
Chris Pine's really good. I mean, you know, he's, as you said before we started, recording this, you said in the trailer he looks kind of like a maniac. And yeah, he's all messed up. He's a Korean war veteran who suffers from PTSD. And he's, you know, if he hears like a bang go off or a noise, he just goes crazy and starts...
But he's trying to solve this mystery?
Yes, he's a reporter and a photographer, and he's trying to solve this whole thing. And the girl... goes out to L.A. She leaves Reno, Nevada, and they kind of meet up and kind of try to solve the
situation. So you recommend it? We should hop on board.
It's really, I don't think it's great. I've seen four out of the six episodes. I think it's...
Sounds like you've saved me 4 hours.
It's very watchable. It's shot really well, and it's fun, and Chris Pine's performance is excellent. It's a little obvious at times, but it sucks you in right away. It's not like a lot of heavy lifting for this thing. You watch it, it's
I find that when professionals are involved, most things are shot really well.
No, but this is
the really
like,
shitty stuff tends to be home movies.
No, so, but I mean, if you see this...
And that shouldn't be the baseline for recommending it.
I recommend it for Chris Pine's performance.
I'll tell you what,
I recommend it.
The mystery I want to solve here is why you didn't like the second season of Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, because I have gotten now to the fifth episode, and the mystery about this whole thing has been she has not
only seen
revealed...
You have not seen the whole season?
She has not revealed to her parents that she does stand-up comedy. So as something that has been hanging over this series for a long time,
okay.
I had a lovely revelation with, I won't say who, but someone in her family that sees her doing stand-up for the first time. And I just think this series is getting better and better this year.
Well,
I know you
really
didn't like
to table the discussion until you watch the whole season.
I'm five in and like it. You said you hated the whole season.
So I'm going to repeat myself from a previous podcast.
No, you don't have to. You
so
know,
I'll
you,
just say very
like
quickly
it.
That what I love about the show in the first season was that the focus...
Rachel Brosnahan, by the way, just won again.
Yes, is that Rachel Brosnahan, who plays sort of like... It's sort of like the Joan Rivers story.
SAG Award.
You know, and... When they focus on this woman in the late 1950s who's trying to break into the world of stand-up comedy, which is a male, completely male-dominated
field. Also won Best
field.
Ensemble, and these people, these Screen Actors Guild people, saw the second season, too, and seemed
well,
to disagree with you.
Well, you're asking me why I don't like
no, go
the
ahead.
Second
Keep
season.
Going.
I'm trying
Keep
to
going.
Tell you, and right. You're not going
to
let me
You
talk.
Seem to be a cult of one on this, but go ahead.
So what I liked about the first season was the focus was on this woman who was trying to break into a male-dominated field, which is stand-up comedy, which was unheard of for a woman to do that. And here was a woman who was living a, you know, an Upper West Side of New York existence with a husband and kids and, you know, a very sheltered life. They had a lot of money. The apartment was like the size of like.
I think people know all that. So what let you down in the second season?
The second season is the first two episodes. The focus was completely off of that. And it was on her parents having a fight and living in Paris for a while. I thought those first two episodes in Paris sucked.
They were great. Continue.
Second couple of episodes took place.
Tony Shalhoub won the Screen Actors Guild the other night.
Probably on the
power of those two episodes alone. Keep going.
It's the writing and the writing. The performances. Right. The actors are fine. The next three episodes took place in the Catskill Mountains, and having been in the Catskill Mountains at that particular, you know, as a kid, it's so over the top. It is not reflective of what the Catskill Mountains, and I don't really give a shit about the Catskill Mountains. I like when the focus is on Matt.
The Catskill Mountains were given
Midge,
a special Screen Actors Guild Award
Midge,
the other night.
The stand-up comic. So I think the fifth episode, which is what you saw, was very good. Uh-huh. And I think the last two episodes are great, which you haven't gotten to yet.
Which are on par with
the first season, uh-huh, because those completely focus on,
I know she gets on television, and I can tell
she
you now.
She does a telethon. She's booked on the telethon, and the character played by... what's her name? She hosts
Susie, her host.
No, she hosts. She was in 40-Year-Old Virgin. She hosts.
Jane Lynch.
Jane Lynch comes back, and the last two episodes, and she meets up with Lenny Bruce, Rachel Brosnahan's character, and it's great. But this all sounds awful. I think three of the ten episodes are terrific, and seven of the ten episodes suck. So that's where I am on that.
I can tell you now from an inside source that no one's supposed to know about that they go to Miami next season.
Thank God.
You know she's going to get more television exposure. If I had to guess, and when I said this to the person inside the show, they just looked away. She gets on, if I was going to guess, I would say the Jackie Gleason show. And because that time's about right, and she's in Miami. I'm sure she's working clubs down there too. But if she's going to get on TV.
Unless the show moves to the mid-60s, the Jackie Gleason show came out of New York until 1965.
It's running. It's in the 60s now, isn't it? Aren't they in the Catskills in like the 62, 63? Because they're driving cars from that era. I'm not sure.
Gleason was out of New York from the Ed Sullivan Theater, to be exact, up until like the mid-60s. So if she is there, Beach audience is the greatest audience.
Yeah. When did that show start then? When did that Jackie Gleason show start?
The Jackie Gleason show that came out of New York?
No, the one that came out of Miami.
I just said they moved to Miami in like the mid-60s.
Yeah, okay. So maybe she won't.
Maybe
but
they
moved
ahead a few years.
They are going to Miami. That's all I know.
Gleason had so much power with CBS that he was able to... There were no shows, primetime shows, coming out of Miami. That Gleason said, if you want me to continue doing the show, it was like the number two or number three show on the network. I like to play golf year-round. I want to move to Miami. And he moved the show to Miami. They found a theater in Miami. And they converted it to television.
How sweet it was.
And he built a big round house because he was a big fat guy. And that house is just in the news about a year ago. They sold the Gleason house. Somebody bought the Gleason house down there.
Really? Another fat guy?
I don't know. But, when I was a kid and I was in Miami, it was a big sign. I think home
Louis
of Jackie
Anderson
Gleason.
Buy that house?
What's that?
Did Louis Anderson buy that
I don't
house?
Know. It's at home of Jackie Gleason, the home of, I don't know if that theater is still standing anymore. Anyway, moving on, because we've digressed quite a bit, Bill McCuddy and I saw the first few episodes of the third season of Crashing. Tell me your thoughts, Bill, and then I will chime in with mine.
Well,
Crashing
people know
the
that
Judd
this
Apatow
is this lives in a world of stand-up comedy that you and I, that all three of us are pretty familiar with. Bill, one of Bill's best friends is Gilbert Gottfried, for those of you who haven't heard the podcast before, and I do stand-up regularly. I was at Caroline's the other night.
And I used to do stand-up, I hang out at comedy clubs.
And they closed those clubs in solidarity. But look, this is a guy, Pete Holmes, who I enjoy watching. I'm not a huge fan of his comedy.
Nor am I.
But he's an affable, likable guy. And it takes place at a place you go to all the time, the Comedy Cellar. And it's authentic.
The Mecca of comedy clubs.
Lots of real comics are in it. Artie Lang is in it.
Dan Natterman, who did our podcast.
So
Davidoff.
I like the show. I think anything Judd Apatow does from Love or any of the series that he's involved with
are great.
And I was disappointed in the first episode and really started to like more the second episode.
So here's my question. In the first two seasons, the first season, the Pete Holmes character...
I mean, let me stop you for a second because I'm going to agree with something you said. This show is starting to suffer from the same problem that the Maisel show, the Marvelous Maisel show suffers from, which is that to make it interesting, they had to keep her under the radar. And to, the problem with Crashing is he's going to break through. He's hit some success in this on the college tour. But if he gets to a level of stardom in this show, it's kind of all over.
Well, I think what the show is trying to do, and I'm guessing, is show you the trajectory of this guy. In the first season, he's not even doing comedy in the first episode. He's, you know, his wife tells him that she's having an affair with another guy and throws him out of the house. And he kind of discovers stand-up comedy, and he's playing these horrible clubs to audiences of like 2-3 people.
Where you have to pass out flyers and get
people. What do you call that?
There's a name. There's a
bus.
Bringers. You have to bring bringers, I think. Something like that.
Something where he's handing out pamphlets on the
street.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. You have to pace. You have to fill the crowd.
And he would do that all day, and he wouldn't even get a spot. If he got a spot, he's on at like 2 in the morning performing in front of like 4 people. And then in the second season, he got a little more known, and he outshone his girlfriend at this audition for where all these colleges come, as you were saying.
And he was staying with, we should say, different comics,
yeah,
like Sarah Silverman.
Sarah Silverman's couch, Artie and she's played Sarah Silverman.
Yeah, and that was interesting to me. He was hopping around. He's got an apartment now in this season. And
right, so I don't know. The show took a leap of faith because when the third season started, all of a sudden he's got an audition for the Comedy Cellar. He goes back to the Boston Comedy Club where Doug Davidoff is, you know, running the club. Hey, superstar, how you doing? I don't know how this guy got that, you know.
Well, the superstar, they're making fun of him because he went out on the college circuit. Like, he's doing colleges and doing well at that.
For 6 months, he went on a six-month
Yeah, so
thing.
He was out of town. And out of sight, out of mind in New York comedy world, believe me. So I think they were teasing him when he came back. And the first episode, he brings a kid from the road with him, which is got Jabuki is his name.
Yeah, well, Jabuki is a regular on The Daily Show now. He's now a regular correspondent on The Daily Show. So
so Crashing is a springboard to greatness.
I think the show is a trajectory of this guy. You see him starting from not even being a stand-up to how it begins. And
but the hungrier he is, the more interesting is what I'm saying.
What's that?
The hungrier he is, the more interesting
the
show.
No, I was going to say I don't agree with that.
Really?
I
so you like him? He's ascending now and you
the
like that.
The first episode where he gets an audition for Esty at the Comedy Cellar, played by Esty at the Comedy Cellar, it was all real. All those comics that they have in that show are real comics that work there. I don't want to tell you what happens if you watch the show, whether he passes or doesn't get the audition, but it's really kind of like that.
Well, but I won't give anything else away either and say that for a Judd Apatow produced and Pete Holmes written, and I found this thing to be really clever, that first episode this third season is pretty predictable.
I liked it very much because I thought it was very real. And Judd Apatow, who I've seen at the Comedy Cellar, that's his club when he comes to New
name
York.
Dropper.
He has a stand-up special, which is very
this
good.
This name-dropping
and
brought
no,
to you by
LaCroix. He knows that the whole scene at the Comedy Cellar.
Of course. I
and
get it.
And he came up through the Comedy Cellar before he became a famous guy, and now he hangs out there and does sets there, comedy material there. But the second episode, two people that I know, Ilan Gold, a comedian, a very funny guy, and Modi, another funny guy, that was very funny also. They get Pete Holmes a gig at a Jewish center.
And he gets a girlfriend who I predict is going to be like a total stalker.
Well, I really like that episode. And I like those two guys in person. I know them personally. They're very funny guys, nice guys. And I thought they did a really good job. I mean, they're not actors.
The second
comics.
Episode's much funnier. And I think this new girlfriend is going to add some comic relief. So we'll see.
I mean, they're playing a
we're
temple.
Two in and let's see. They're, you don't hate the whole thing yet. That's the important.
I like the
That's
thing.
The important headline here.
No, the headline
because
is
you so the, often watch a season of something and go, I hate this, and you're wrong. So I just want to make sure.
No, I'm saying that I have the opposite opinion that you did, that when he was hungry and crashing on couches and he was had this, they were talking about his devote, he was a goody-goody and he, you know, was like a very religious guy and it went against his religion to like have sex outside of marriage and all that kind of stuff. I find the fact that now he's a little more seasoned, he's doing shots with people, you know, he's drinking and he's more seasoned and he's not really made it as a superstar.
He's on the road to hell and you like that.
No, he's more like a normal guy, you know what I mean?
Right.
Work in the comedy clubs as opposed to this. I never understood why these other comics, except for the device of the fact that he was a star of the show, were kind of mentoring him and being nice to him when he was this nerdy, weird guy that wouldn't drink and wouldn't like fool around with anybody and wouldn't even do dirty, blue material.
You know, the truth about stand-up is that they really don't really help each other.
Right, but I'm saying, like, I didn't buy that at all in the first two seasons. Right. Now that he's acting like a regular person that you'd see at a comedy club, I could understand why he has some kind of relationship with these people. He was just so out there in the first two seasons, it didn't sync up with me. It didn't gel.
All right.
But anyway, I like what I've seen so far. You saw three episodes. I saw two.
Yeah.
I don't remember. You tell me you don't remember what before we started rolling with the
I only saw two.
But did that...
Look, I want to see more. I'm going to stay with it. So they seem to get, you know, and as the show gets more popular, they get better and better stars. So Ray Romano is on next week or coming shortly. And I'm interested.
And, you know, you're speaking about Judd Apatow. It's funny that last week, when something's on HBO, they just keep running it and running it. I've been watching Funny People, my favorite movie of the year, whatever year that came out. I think it's 10 years ago now. And it's just such a great movie. If you haven't seen it, and you have HBO, it's just
I see you making jokes about me like I'm in a Bond movie. That's very funny to you, I guess.
How funny was that sequence?
I guess so. Yeah, I see.
Seth Rogen goes...
You're a very funny man, but I'm telling you, you're dying.
It's really a good movie. It's a really good movie. I tell you... The first half.
She's like a little mouse. Yeah, a little mouse you want to put your dick in. It's like they're talking about Aubrey Plaza.
Jason Schwartzman is so funny. Jonah Hill is funny. Adam Sandler is great.
And talk about what we were talking about a moment ago, how competitive comedians are. When one of the roommates gets hired to be Adam Sandler's... Well, there's three levels. You're right. There's Jason Schwartzman.
Story, right.
Jason Schwartzman has a sitcom called
Adam
Hey Teach
Sandler
that they hate.
But Adam Sandler sees both of these guys... performing in a comedy
Seth Rogen
club,
and
right, and
Jonah Hill.
And he calls up and he says, I want to hire you both of you guys.
Seth Rogen goes, oh, you don't want Jonah Hill.
No,
he's not that funny.
Jonah's,
well,
Jonah's character, he's busy, he can't do it.
Yeah, well, right.
Which he calls him on later because he goes to a dinner.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, you know, we've talked about this movie a lot, and so maybe it doesn't need it one more time.
But the
time,
one you're talking
but,
about
like,
is right, the Hey Teach thing.
I love, there's so many little things about the movie. I love that he made... Adam, they talk about Adam Sandler being famous, and he's made a lot of big movies, obviously. And one of them was called Redo, and it's Adam Sandler's head on a baby, and they show like a second of it, and the kids are watching it. It's really, I mean, there's just so many moments in that movie that are great.
Well, they're goofing on bad Adam Sandler. Apparently, he's this character called Merman or something. He's like the body of a man, and he's got the like splash. He's got the, you know. And he's having sex with some woman, and she's going, do the merman voice for me. I mean...
Wait, what was the point of this story?
The point is that I love this movie, Funny People. It's running on HBO right now. If you haven't seen it, it was my favorite movie of the year. I believe it's 2009. And there's so many great... I mean, there's a great line. He thinks he's, you know, he's dying, actually. He's trying to get cured of this disease. And he opens up his garage, and there's all this stuff in there. A jet ski, a flat screen
swag.
TV, golf bag, all that. And he goes, it doesn't make sense. When you're poor, I couldn't afford this stuff. Now that I can afford it, they just give you this stuff. They just and it's true, you know, when you're famous, they just give
I have
you
a
stuff.
Feeling, by the way, speaking
and
of the
Leslie
Pete Holmes
Mann's
show,
good,
Leslie Mann's great. She's great. She's a really gifted comedian. It's not just his... wife.
That's Judd Apatow's
I have a feeling that a lot of his street cred with all of the comics who want to work with him comes out of that film, talking about Judd Apatow. So somebody like a Pete Holmes goes, man, this guy gets comedy so well. If I want to do a movie or a show or anything about show business, Judd Apatow's the guy.
Well, Judd Apatow, it was just announced today, is going to return to the director's chair and make a movie starring the guy from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, Pete Davidson.
Pete Davidson.
Yeah, I saw that.
So
we will talk about that if we learn more about it next week. We will also talk about the new movies that are opening.
That's right. One of them is What Men Want.
And one of them is Isn't It Romantic?
Yeah.
With Rebel Wilson.
No, that's a few
not
weeks
opening
later.
Then. Oh. But you guys are seeing that tomorrow night.
Right.
We are.
The Lego Movie 2 that I already told you about.
This mistake we didn't edit out of Neil's is brought to you by LaCroix. We've got to get a sponsor because we have so many great opportunities.
That's right. That's right.
Merchandise, this whole thing.
So that's what we're
doing. So, all right. So, join us next week. What do we do on the show every week, Bill McCuddy?
We listen to you try to end it, which you just did, but we also see the bad movies so you don't have to.
We do. And again, one of these days, Bill Bregoli, nah, I don't think he'll ever get any kind of social media. So.
I like that he's a rebel, but we're not. We're whores. I'm at Bill McCuddy on Twitter.
I'm at Neil Rosen Apples. And
we'll not let that Apples thing go.
Write us, and we will, if your question is interesting, we will read it on the podcast, and we will discuss it on the podcast. In the meantime, until next week, thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. We'll sit around talking movies again with you next week.